Welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. Sorry, we've been gone for a little while, but we're back because the transfer window is still in full swing. And apologies, we've missed a couple of episodes because we've had some very, very busy times at work. Trips and illness has obliterated its way through the camp, the Talking Transfers camp. But we are back with a full squad today. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent, Graham Bailey. 90 Min's top cat, Toby Cudworth, and 90 Min's writer, editor, the Spurs and Brentford man, Sean Walsh. Let's speak to Toby first. How are you doing, Toby?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. My birthday last week, which interrupted Talking Transfers recording, as you alluded to, exceptionally busy as well. And you were away in Vegas, Scott, which didn't help matters. But yep, lots for us to get into today, and I think the transfer window, we've been saying it's been mad all summer long. This might be one of the maddest weeks that we've had, certainly the last 24, 48 hours. Lots happening.
For you?
For me personally, but also a load of other deals that seem to be coming to a head, which we'll discuss.
A lot of birthdays in the camp, actually. Toby, Sean, myself. Graham, has your birthday been recently? When's your birthday?
December.
Okay. Just imagining things that everyone's got a July, August birthday because that is the best time of year to have a birthday. Anyway, Shawnee, how's it going? Been on holiday as well.
Yes, have been. I've been to Porto. Beautiful city, very cheap city. Would recommend to anyone that goes. A lot of nonsense still happened while I was away. That was when I remember I was on the beach on the coast having a nice day. I get a notification on my phone. Arsenal moving for David Raya. And I pretty much just wanted to walk in the ocean and not look back. So... That really is something for me. I'm working on an article, why Arsenal signing David Raya is worse for me than Sol Campbell. But, you know, we move forward. Life goes on, you know.
Just on that, actually. Now, I'm out of the loop. I know this is happening. Who's going to be the number one there?
It feels like there's enough momentum for it to be Ramsdale to start with. But I do think that it might be a thing where they'd rotate them in the Cups and the Champions League. So Ramsdale gets the Premier League games. He's the natural number one. But Raya comes in. I think he could put in some really good performances in the Cups and the Champions League. And he eventually ousts Ramsdale if he has a little injury or if he has a few weeks where he puts in a few stinkers. So I'm not buying the whole narrative that, oh, it's good to create this competition. I'm struggling to think of many situations where having two goalkeepers of this class really works in the long term. Yeah, I think so as well.
Graham, any intel on that Raya Ramsdale call? Because I'm sure Aaron Ramsdale, when he signed a contract at the start of the summer, was thinking, oh, I can't wait to play in the Champions League. And how's it going to work if it happens like this?
Yeah, he's been signed to be number two. He's been signed to be high class backup. If you remember, Scott, a few months ago we did talk about Raya possibly a number two elsewhere. He was linked to Manchester United considered him for a long time to come in to back up David Raya and David De Gea, sorry, and we weren't sure about that. I was always told that the club's looking at him. Aaron Ramsdale's Arsenal number one. David Raya's coming in as top quality backup. The Premier League just aren't as high on David Raya as Sean is. Simple as that. He's just not as high. He's not as good I'm not saying he's not as good as Sean thinks he is. I think he's a good keeper. The Premier League just don't agree. He's coming in as a high class backup. Aaron Ramsdale firmly number one for Arsenal. Arteta loves him, but they do want the Arsenal progressing now to challenge the likes of City and Liverpool. At the very top end. So you need a high-class number two. Matt Turner wasn't that man, which is why he's gone to Nottingham Forest. And David Raya, yeah, does he try and compete at Brentford and wait until next summer? He's taking a chance. He thinks he may be able to usurp Aaron Ramsdale. I don't think he will. But, high-quality backup. And you know, he's not on a huge deal at Brentford. So he'll be getting a huge pay rise even by going to Arsenal, as we alluded to when we talked about United with him. I'm slightly surprised. You know, I'm still amazed that Tottenham didn't push that one over the line. But one they might choose to regret, I think.
I look at Chelsea as well and think, why? Why not?
Because they Chelsea looked. They don't see. Is he nearly twice? What did Sanchez go for? 25? Rhea, nearly 40. Is he £10 million better than Sanchez? Chelsea don't think so. Sanchez come in to provide competition for Kepa. They're fairly happy with Kepa. You know, obviously, they would like to upgrade that position, but it's just not a priority at the moment. So they brought Sanchez in as that backup. I said the Premier League just aren't as high on Rhea and Sanchez as perhaps we were at 90 men.
Graham, are you telling me that Alphonse Areola is going to lose his title as the highest paid number two goalkeeper in the Premier League? Is that what we're looking at?
No, I don't think we will. I don't think Rhea will get an Areola contract. As we know, that's a huge contract, Toby. A huge, ludicrous contract that West Ham handed him. I don't think Rhea's getting that money either, to be honest. So, sorry, you'll keep that crown, Toby.
Today we'll talk about Harry Kane, the latest on him, some other Tottenham business, Bernardo Silva at Man City, whether he signs a new deal or leaves for potentially Barcelona. Will they push for him? We'll talk Kyle Walker. We'll talk Christopher Nkunku, Dusan Vlahovic, Moises Caicedo, Mohamed Kudus, the West Ham double potential deal to take Manchester United stalwarts Harry Maguire and Scott McTominay to the London Stadium. We'll talk Neymar. We'll talk Liverpool going after Romeo Lavia and following Balogun at the end as well. I want to start today's show, though, with Graham's hot take on Rasmus Højlund, who's just signed for Man United.
Next season, Rasmus Højlund won't score as many goals as Wout Weghorst, wherever he ends up.
Oh, my God.
So you're saying Wout Weghorst can go to like, is he going to...
No, whichever club he ends up, he'll score more than Rasmus Højlund. Whether he stays at Burnley, whether he goes elsewhere, he will score more goals than Rasmus Højlund next season.
Graham, I would just like to understand your default position on every single piece of Man United business that they ever do is automatically terrible. Why? Why is this?
Not at all. I think Andre Onana is a quality keeper, quality signing. I don't think it gets Manchester any more points next season. It improves them as a team footballing-wise in terms of what Ten Hag wants to do, but I don't think it earns you any more points. I like Mason Mount as a player. As I've said on the show before, I just don't think Man United and Mason Mount are the right fit. I think it's a decent sign for both, but I just don't think he's the right player for you. In terms of Rasmus Højlund... It's just a huge, huge gamble. I saw his debut for Denmark. He looked good. I saw a bit of him at Atalanta and he looked decidedly average. I think it's a massive, massive gamble. And I'm not a huge fan of it. I think Sesko's got more potential than him, I'll be honest.
Well, to be fair, Graham, when I came to you talking about Benjamin Sesko, you said he was nothing special. Do you remember that?
I do.
18 months ago.
Højlund's got even less of a high. I think Sesko's got a higher ceiling. I think he's proved it slightly from the time since we spoke, Scott. He had that hat trick, didn't he? I saw a bit more of him because obviously having spoken about him, we watched him a bit more. Took more of an interest in him, actually. And I was impressed by what we saw. And don't get me wrong, Højlund didn't choose his price tag. That's not up to him. I think you've signed a £40 million striker for probably twice the price, but that's not his fault. And I realise that. And I feel a bit sorry for him. The pressure is going to be huge. Obviously, we'll see what happens with Mason Greenwood and who else comes in. We talked him with United, ideally wanted two strikers, Scott. And he was obviously on the list of potential ones coming in. And I think that would have been the ideal scenario for him. So I don't think he's a bad signing, but I just hope he doesn't go in straight away expecting 20, 30 goals next season from him. I suspect that might be the case.
I think a 10 to 15 goal season for Rasmus Højlund would be a very good start.
I think it's a lot of money to pay, but I think they were backed into a corner, Scott, as we discussed off pod. I think they had to do it in the end, didn't they? They had little option elsewhere to do it. But I don't think United have made massive improvement. The transfers they've done, they've spent over £100 million. I don't see a huge improvement.
I think they've improved in each of those positions drastically. But Toby?
just to add, I think this is a very wild comparison, but I look at Højlund's arrival and I go back 20 years to Robin van Persie turning up at Arsenal. He hadn't done a lot for Feyenoord, but he turned up. It's a similar situation, Graham. Van Persie hadn't done... I know the money is different, but you're talking about a 20-year-old striker who clearly has got a little bit about him. Van Persie started off slow, And I think he scored 10, 12 goals in his first couple of seasons at Arsenal, and then he went on to become one of the best strikers in the world. I think it would be remiss of us to write Højlund off and to say that he's got to score 25 or 30 in his first season. As you say, Scott, I think 10, 12 would be a really good start for him. And what, he's going to be United striker, or his intention is to be United striker for what, next 7, 8, 9 years? That's where he's going to score his goals.
The alternative is United could still be quabbling about a price on Harry Kane, like Bayern Munich are doing with the Premier League season just a few days away. Anyway, let's talk Harry Kane to start with, because who's got the latest? Sean, have you got the latest, or has Graham got the latest?
I can tell you if you want, Graham.
Yeah, please do, Sean.
Yeah, so we understand that Kane has informed Tottenham that he will not consider Bayern's offer if he is still at the club by the time they take on Brentford on Sunday, which I think was kind of knowledge now that that was a situation that was going to happen. I think that Spurs have been confident throughout the summer that they will keep hold of Harry Kane. That was the view from across Europe, that no matter what team puts in any kind of bid, Spurs will not relent. It got a little bit sticky last week. I think there was a lot of Spurs fans panicking that Bayern's improved offer might tempt Tottenham, but ultimately, I think they're going to remain firm in their evaluation. They're not going to let him go. Bayern, are they going to come back? They might still come back, but I think they would be wasting their time. I think that this is now, there's too big a gap in the valuation of Kane with Tottenham to continue doing this. They should look at other targets. They are going to look at other targets. And I'm happy for Spurs that Kane will at least stay for at least one more season. Spurs have always believed that they can convince Kane to sign a new contract. And we talked a few weeks ago, Graham, that the relationship with Ange Postecoglou could be a big factor in that. And all the noises out of Spurs are saying that the early signs are good, that Kane is buying into what Postecoglou wants to preach with his football. I've been really impressed with how he's handled the saga in general. He's been quite straightforward, like, if Harry's here, great. If he's not, then I just want to know so I can work with the group so we can know what we're going with going forward. He's not someone who really minces his words. He's not someone who just kind of beats around the bush. He's really to the point. Got the first glimpse of that on Sunday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. There was a moment midway through the first half where Pierre-Emile Højbjerg hoofed the ball away under absolutely no pressure, and Postecoglou let him know about it from the touchline. He was very, very upset. And I think this mixture of charisma, of no-nonsense, of wanting to play this attacking round of football, these are all things that Spurs needed to instill. And this will, I'm not saying it's going to keep Kane in the long term, but it should help their case to him signing a new contract eventually.
Anything to add on that, Graham? Is it looking unlikely now that this move is going to, well, to be fair, we never, we spoke on this podcast months ago and we said, can you really see this coming off?
No, we were one of the first to push the Bayern Munich interest, weren't we? We found about that a while ago, and even when we knew about it, we weren't convinced. In the ideal world, it is a good fit, but do I see it? My understanding is that Kane now is in a position where he can give this Ange ball a chance. Come January, he's going to have all the options in the world. Why sign a deal with Bayern now? Bayern aren't going anywhere. They'll be there in January, but who else is going to be there in January? Could be an awful lot of clubs there in January, including Tottenham, and he might very well sign this new deal. It's better to have all the options available to him, and I think that's the way he's going ahead of the European Championships. It could be a sensational 12 months again. I think he's quite happy to have those options available to him. You know, there has been talks with Bayern, but how I think a lot of this positivity about getting the deal done has come from a Bayern end. It really has. It's come from Germany. I've never really been that convinced that he was going to do it. And will Bayern be able to get his deal done by Saturday? Kane won't have talks after Saturday once the Premier League season started, is our understanding. So I don't see it, no. I think he's definitely staying from as we speak.
Are Bayern going to switch targets then?
It's a possibility. We did a piece on the website earlier this week. We know they have been in touch again with Vlahovic's people. Again, we always said Vlahovic is such a fascinating figure in this window. We'll talk about the Chelsea stuff and the injury to Nkunku and what that might mean, but I think he's on their list. It's interesting that Randall Colomwani, a player who I always thought that Bayern would turn to, has suddenly agreed terms with PSG. And you think about it, he's the ideal.
We've already signed Gonzalo Ramos as well.
Yeah, but Colomwani's that Mbappe replacement, isn't he? We saw him come on, he came on the left for France, didn't he? I think he's a perfect replacement for him. I really do. And so With Neymar, possibly. We'll touch on Neymar in the show maybe later, with him moving out. I think PSG made some sensible signings, and Kolo Muani, it looks like they'll miss out on him. Yeah, so what do Bayern do? We talked about, I think, off-pod Jonathan David might become an option for Bayern, although they're not in love with him. So it's a fascinating to see where Bayern are going to go with this.
Sean, let's just jump back to Spurs, because there's some other players who are potentially on the agenda for them. Just wanted to ask you a question. Are Spurs going to concede a lot of goals this year?
Yes, definitely. the hope is that, so obviously Spurs conceded 63 last season, which was, bar two, I think only the relegated clubs had a worse record than that. It was an astonishingly poor defensive season. I can't imagine it massively improving anytime soon, just because I think this is the first season under a new manager who wants to play this really high line. That could spell trouble. But my saving grace is that the difference between Spurs' goals against record and their expected goals against, it was staggering, and it pointed to the keeper being completely useless. So all Guglielmo Vaccari has to do is not be at fault for 10 or 12 points this season, and Spurs should be a little bit better. In the defensive department, by the time this pod's up, I imagine that Spurs will have announced the signing of Mickey van der Ven from Wolfsburg, one of their top two targets in that position, alongside Edmund Tapsoba. He is rapid. I haven't seen many defenders as quick as him off the mark. That will really help with playing in high back line. And Ange Postecoglou got asked this on Sunday about van der Ven in particular, and he gave a good answer, because he was very adamant with the Kane thing. He was like, I'm not going to speak about contracted players, other clubs. And so when he was asked about van der Ven, he kind of scooted around it, but basically just described, oh yeah, we want players who can come in, they can play aggressive in this high line, they can bring the ball out, just describing van der Ven basically without saying his name. And that should help. I think he is a very raw prospect, which, you know, for a defender to be raw is quite, it's a little bit of a worry if they're coming in straight away and he's having to play alongside a real aggressor in Christian Romero. There will be games this season.
I saw a tweet the other day, Sean, something along the lines of Porro, Udoji, Romero and van der Ven is just the funniest back four you could potentially ever concoct.
I am now believing that I don't think Porro can start in this team. I think Emerson will start to begin with, just as a more conservative option, someone who tracks back a little bit more. But I think there'll be a world where Porro starts right wing in some games, which is a little bit mad to think of. It's one of those, it just points to the kind of the transfer strategy of the last few years has really been, it's this kind of dual thing where that Spurs have backed the manager, but they also really haven't put much thought into the long term. Like when Spurs made Porro 45 mil signing back in January, knowing that Conte was probably going to leave and they were going to have to ditch this wing-back system at some point. It was just ludicrous at the time, but whatever.
Well, there we go. Harry Kane potentially looking like he's staying. There's another potential signing that Tottenham could make, a striker from South America. Is this reliant on Harry Kane, or is this just going to... How are we looking with this?
So Villas,
yes.
Yeah, no, he's coming anyway. He's been a long-term target. They've beaten quite a few clubs for him. Very talented boy. Chances are he's loaned back to Argentina for 6 months at least, maybe a year. He's one for the long term. Interesting. I was going to touch with Sean actually. Sean, did you notice that? And this came up in Scotland. Rio Hatate was dropped by Brendan Rodgers at the weekend, much to the chagrin of a lot of Celtic fans. They think that's a sign of things to come, recognised by many as the best midfielder in Scotland, had a wonderful pre-season as well. And he didn't start at the weekend, which raises three eyebrows. Still wouldn't surprise me if he turned up at Tottenham, would it you?
Of all the Celtic players that have been linked with Spurs, he's probably the one that I'd be happiest with most. That said, I think that I feel like Spurs are quite set with their midfield options. I want to see Pape Sarr and Oliver Skip given more game time while Bentancur comes back from ACL injury. If Hatate comes in, I wouldn't be like totally against it, but I think that we are quite set there. I feel like some more defensive reinforcements should be higher up Spurs' priority list, but not Cameron Carter-Vickers.
Just a couple of notes. I'm seeing that Tottenham are in the process of announcing van der Ven now. They've done, ooh, as I'll show you, they've just posted this on their socials with their basically his face, but blanked out. And news from just on the pipeline about where Veghorst is going. Hoffenheim, potentially. So there you go.
That's good news for Graham's bet, because Veghorst scored two goals in the Premier League in 37 games. Good job he's not staying at
Burnley. He scored zero Premier League goals last season. He scored goals on the whole.
You know what? I'll tell you what. If he scored zero again, Højlund will be closer to Veghorst than he will be Haaland.
I don't think that's an outstanding take, to be honest.
To be fair, if he is going to Hoffenheim, it's a very good fit for him. I don't think many people would take me up on that anyway. But I say I don't think Veghorst is as poor as United numbers have suggested. But no, and I'm not having to go at Højlund. It's just for that money.
Well, you
pound,
are.
Pound for pound.
Well, I am, yeah. Kid.
It's not a good signing. It's not. There you go. It's not a good time for United. And I'm six foot four, can do
100 meters in 10 seconds. Strong as an ox. Six for Denmark.
You could be describing Ashley Fletcher for those first few stats. Just because you've got everything in your locker doesn't mean you use it. But it's one of those. I think United have just blown a lot of money. 100 million. You've spent 100 million on three players. And you barely improve, in my opinion. But we'll see. That's what the predictions are for, and we'll see what United do. And I'm annoyed for...
How low do you have United down the table?
I can't remember my picks. Do you know what? Who's won me over in their pre-season analysis? Sean's won me over. I think I've got Tottenham fourth. with brackets with Kane staying. If Kane didn't stay, I wouldn't. I've got Spurs in fourth. I think I've got United fifth or sixth, Scott. So not too low. Not too low. I've got Liverpool. I think the top three are done. I think the top three are gone. And then it's a fantastic battle for fourth, fifth and sixth. I've got Villa fourth or fifth as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
I've got Chelsea and Newcastle below United. I know that. But I think that fourth, fifth battle is going to be brilliant. But I feel a bit sorry for United fans. I think coming in,
well,
as I said,
don't,
I said,
don't
as
worry,
I said,
Graham.
Before,
I'm quite happy with the summer so far.
I think you could have been so much more, though. I'm frustrated for United fans. I think it could have been so much more. I really do.
I feel like I'm getting the spade out, but I'm sure, G, that you told us Chelsea would be in title contention with Mauricio Pochettino. Now you're saying that they might be sixth or seventh.
We're doing our, obviously, in office predictions for the website, and I'm just trying to remember. I've sent to our colleague Jack. I can't quite remember what my top six or it's like top six, seven, eight now, isn't it? There's that many teams there.
You could go as far as nine, really. Villa, Brighton, Newcastle.
For a spoiler, I did go City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham, Villa, United, Chelsea, Newcastle.
Tottenham, Villa, United. Fair play. Aston Villa.
Although I think
Villa 10th for what it's worth.
I think there could be like one or two points between all those all season as well. It could be a knife edge between those.
Toby, have you got Arsenal to win the league or City?
City. Yeah. I don't think you can ever look beyond City. Until they lose it once, then you can start betting against them. But I don't see how you can view it any other way, really. I know Sean's actually going to pipe up and say he's gone for Arsenal. But for me, City have got the proven track record. They've got to lose it first.
Yeah.
Where have you got Liverpool, Scott, where have you got Liverpool?
Fourth.
I also have United. Fourth.
I've got United second, so there we go.
Okay.
Third last season, improvement of one position after signing players.
Graham, where do you think Borough are going to finish this season?
Well, no comment. I definitely think you finish second in Manchester. I shouldn't be slated for supporting my hometown club. I shouldn't be slated for that. But we'll look at Middlesbrough at the end of August when we get some loan players, hopefully. Maybe some from United, hopefully. Michael Carrick can pull a few strings. But
Michael Carrick was crap when you appointed him.
I thought he was untested.
Kieran McKenna as well. But there we go.
I've never slated Kieran McKenna.
He came from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's coaching team, Graham.
Kim McKenna was a fantastic appointment for Ipswich. And if you look back on my pre-match podcast, my slide line, you will hear me praising Kieran McKenna every week.
Okay, let's talk Man City, because Bernardo Silva has wanted to go for what seems like forever. But could he re-sign, Graham?
there's that possibility. We spoke about him being offered the terms that would take him onto the level of De Bruyne and Haaland. He's obviously he's not in the poor house now, but he would certainly go to that next level in terms of Premier League players, one of the highest paid players in the Premier League he would become if he signed this new deal. City are really in a quandary here because they've always said they won't keep an unhappy player. But such has been this summer of losing Mahrez. They've let Mahrez go because he was unhappy, ironically. Gundogan left. And Silva Vinova just not in a position to replace him at all. So as a sort of cushion to him staying, they have offered him this deal. They thought they'd priced him out the market. Not priced him out, but they said, look, we will let you go at 80 million, which we reported, and they said that. Obviously, but then PSG said, well, actually, we'll pay that. So I thought, okay. And then suddenly Barcelona are backing the money again with Dembele leaving, Kessié leaving, etc. Suddenly Barcelona could actually probably come up with some sort of deal to get Silva. So off the back of that, City have just this week, we understand Silva told Guardiola again that he wanted to leave, but City have been very firm, saying, look, we just can't afford to let you go. And as it stands, as I would say, it'd be a major shock if City bent to that will. They're going to have to keep him. As Toby said on previous editions as well, it'd make no sense for Silva to go now. And I think City realise that. And I think Silva's probably realising that now. So, yeah, he wants to leave. But, hey, that extra few thousand pound a week might come in handy, might be useful cushion for the blow, as we say. But yeah, more than likely, if he does stay, he will sign a new deal. But as it stands, very likely he stays, even though Barcelona are making a push. They are trying to sign him and Cancelo.
So Barcelona are pushing, Cole Palmer scoring in the Community Shield from the right wing. Is a new, obviously Mahrez is gone. Mm-hmm. Is a new winger possible for City? How are they approaching this? And let's throw Kyle Walker in there as well. What's the latest?
Yeah, Cole Palmer's interesting because Brighton like Cole Palmer a lot and they really thought there was a chance of getting him out. Obviously, what he's done around the first team now looks unlikely. James McAtee, another one, but City are probably likely to keep, even though there's a lot of interest in him as well. So keep an eye on Cole Palmer. He's an interesting one. If he doesn't feature in the start of the Premier League campaign, there may be something happening there, but we'll see on him. In terms of Kyle Walker, buying pushing again, but Kyle Walker had as the media highlighted, he had a long meeting at one of the Japanese restaurants in Manchester, which Pep took his bicycle to.
He didn't pay the bill for it though, or he did pay the bill for it, and he wasn't happy about it.
Oh, I thought he said they did a runner on his bike. I didn't read into it. I must admit, I didn't read too much detail into it. But as it started, it looks like Walker's going to stay, I think, from what I'm hearing. He's happy that City have offered him this deal. I think Pep's trying to reassure him. You know, Kyle Walker's in the same boat as Riyad Mahrez, not happy about missing the Champions League final. But I think Pep's moved that over. We are told that if Kyle Walker did leave, they probably wouldn't look for reinforcements. They're quite happy with Rico Lewis, John Stones can fill in the Kanji. But, you know, Pep really doesn't want to lose Walker. So as we are recording here, it doesn't look like Walker and Silva are going. And what was it? There's another one as well. A City. The other winger. Yeah. Winger-wise, yeah. They are looking at wingers. We reported Bradley Barcola at Lyon, who PSG, another one they're trying to get. City are looking at him strongly. It's been backed up in France now that City are keen on him, whether it's this window or not. Michael Lise is an interesting one. City do like him a lot, but it's our information that he's probably Chelsea bound. So I think if there's a winger deal, there's one there to be had, they will do it. But I don't think they're desperate for a winger as it stands.
Interesting. Let's move to Chelsea because we've just had some news as we record this. Chelsea have made a statement on Christopher Nkunku. And the likelihood is that he's out for 3.5 months, 16 weeks before he can resume training. Sustained an injury in pre-season. Obviously, this is one, like, all the best, obviously, to Christopher Nkunku. But I think this is one that's... Chelsea did this deal last year. We kept forgetting that he was going to be one of the 50,000 players that they added to their team. Now their team has completely changed. Now was the time for him to come in and obviously be one of the probably leaders of this new Chelsea. And now he's out for X amount of time. And just seems like, is he ever going to play for them?
Yeah, I made the joke this morning to the guys that I've just about remembered that Nkunku plays for Chelsea. Now he's suffered this injury. It looked pretty good in pre-season by all accounts. And I think there was a bit of a buzz and a bit of an excitement around how he'd done in those first couple of games under Poch. Obviously a huge blow to lose him for such a prolonged period of time. Would explain potentially the move for Michael Olise, because I've always thought Chelsea are quite well stocked for wingers, and we know Nkunku can play in multiple positions. I would expect that Olise deal to definitely go ahead now with Nkunku's injury, and we may see Noni Madueke have more of a prominent role in the first team. We obviously expect Mudryk to have a say in what Chelsea do this season. He's taken a number 10 shirt, so that's quite a big deal for him to take that on. And Nkunku's goals will be missed more than anything. I still look at Chelsea and think, who's going to score their goals this season? I know Nicholas Jackson's looked quite bright, but Nkunku was probably the guy they were looking to get them off the mark quite quickly. Now not having him around, quite a lot of pressure on probably Raheem Sterling as well to step up and carry this Chelsea team forward. But a blow for Poch, but I think if any manager can kind of navigate injury problems, it is probably Pochettino. He's done it before with Harry Kane being the saviour of Spurs on so many occasions. I think Chelsea will be all right, but yeah, huge blow.
I was going to say, when Pochettino first came into Spurs, you were looking around and again wondering where the goal's going to come from. They went into the 14-15 season. Emmanuel Adebayor and Roberto Soldado were the two main strikers in that squad. Apart from that, you had Eric Lamela, who'd played like 9 games the year before. The season was cut short due to a back injury. Nasser Chadli scored once on arrival from FC Twente. Eriksen chips in with goals here and there, but wasn't kind of the consistent source of goals. But Pochettino got goal scores out of that team. Chadli hit double figures. Eriksen hit double figures. Kane became everything and more that you'd ever hoped for in a striker. Poch will find a way to get goals out of this team. Dele Alli came in the year after, straight away. Moved him higher up the pitch, got him to score goals. Pochettino will find a way. He's a good problem solver like that. I think, obviously, Chelsea, this is a huge blow to lose Nkunku, who, as you said, probably maybe not a core member of the team, but maybe the face on the poster outside Stamford Bridge for this new era. That's obviously a big blow, but they will find a way, and that should excite Chelsea fans. Okay, how is Pochettino going to work his magic now?
Chelsea have had the most football manager transfer windows I think I might have ever seen, and they've done the most football manager of squad number changes that I think I might have ever seen. They have essentially changed their entire squad, squad numbers-wise. Enzo has moved from 5 to 8. Raheem Sterling moved to 7. Mudryk to 10, as Toby mentioned there. Nkunku's taken 18. But noticeably, there's the absence of an assigned number 4 and an assigned number 9. So does Graham, does that give you indications on which positions Chelsea would like to strengthen in before the window closes? A defensive mid and a striker.
Yeah, midfield strikers is where they're looking. At least 2 midfielders, we think. Moses Caicedo, we know, is their prime option. That we expect another bid to go in this week, actually. We've seen they're up to 80 million now. Brighton standing firm. Caicedo did miss training this week. Apparently that was allowed, but indications are that he really is pushing for this move now. If Chelsea get to 90... it'll be close, but you know, Chelsea want this deal. It's the add-ons, you know, that's going to do this. They wanted the £100 million deal to be the value of the deal. I think they'll get it, but will it be done by Saturday? Looking unlikely at this stage, whether Chelsea get that high by that point, but they do want him. He's their main target. They're looking elsewhere as well. So Tyler Adams from Leeds is someone who'd have spoken about. He would be as well as Caicedo, not instead of. Same with Lavia. You know, when they were talking about Lavia, it would be to go with him, not instead of. And the forward one's a really interesting option. They have been in talks with Juventus about Vlahovic. Juve put forward the idea of a swap deal with another 40 million that Chelsea would have to give them on top for the deal. There is interest from Chelsea. They've liked Vlahovic, so he was always an option for them. I think Chelsea, from what I'm told, saw it as more of a straight swap with Lukaku. That would be the ideal scenario. But such is the desperation of Chelsea to get Lukaku out. Now, tied in with the Nkunku injury, wouldn't surprise me to see his Vlahovic one move forward. You know, I don't think they're happy about paying 40, but, you know, in the 2030 with Lukaku, I could see it happening. And And don't rule out Mohamed Kudus either. You know, he's a player Chelsea's spoken to as well. Would he be better suited to replace Nkunku? Quite possibly. So it's interesting. Brighton are really trying to get Kudus over the line, but as yet the player hasn't given his green light to that deal.
So that's where we stand on that. It just obviously we saw the other day that Brighton have agreed a fee, but yeah. Kudus for the duration of the summer really has been holding out for one of the big clubs, I'm guessing.
He has, and he knows there's interest there, Scott. You know, we know United have always been long-term admirers, and at some point they might still come back for him. We know Arsenal like him as well. You know, who we saw Kai Havertz struggle at the weekend, but Kudus looks as if he would fit in that Arsenal system as well. I think his people know if we wait a couple of weeks, they might get one of these big boys in the Premier League. No disrespect to Brighton, but Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United, you know, it's them opportunities don't always come around. And so I think he's waiting for that ideally, but Brighton are pushing hard on there. So was that one next few days, we'll see how that one transpires.
Toby, take us through a very, very hot irons in the fire for this week, because there is a deal which is being done as we speak. A medical is being undertaken by a new signing.
Yeah, we'll start with that one, shall we? Edson Álvarez. I think we first reported on this, Graham, back in October last year, that West Ham had sent scouts to Holland to watch Edson Álvarez. They were watching Ibrahim Sanguer from PSV Eindhoven. And then that kind of went a little bit quiet. We know Álvarez was on Chelsea and Manchester United's radar. West Ham, as we know, have been pushing for many, many, many midfield targets. But Álvarez is the one that they finally agreed a deal for. We understand the fee could get up to £34 million for him. He's in London now having a medical. As we record this, he's going to sign a 5-year deal. So from West Ham's point of view, a much needed signing once the medical is completed. And if there's not any problems with the paperwork or a last minute change of heart, he'll be the first one in through the door. But it's not the only move that West Ham are working on. Manchester United's Harry Maguire. Try not to smile too much, Scott. Scott McTominay as well.
I'm not smiling,
Tony. You'll certainly take what I'm about to say. West Ham offering £30 million for Harry Maguire yesterday. Already had a £20 million offer rejected by Manchester United. Maguire's on huge wages. Doesn't matter to David Moyes. He wants Harry Maguire. He wants a new centre-back. £30 million offer also in for Scott McTominay, who we understand is not desperate to leave Old Trafford, and he actually thinks that he could still get some first-team football at United this season with Fred and Donny van der Beek looking likely to go. McTominay thinks he could stay put. United would be open to selling him if the price was right, but as it stands, those two offers from West Ham, both £30 million, separate offers, rejected by United. Would anticipate West Ham will go back in for Harry Maguire. Problem there is the wages, as I've already mentioned. He's on a lot of money, and there'd probably need to be a compromise from Maguire or from United to pay a contribution towards Maguire's wages. McTominay, not so sure whether or not West Ham will go back in for him and make another bid. They've got a number of other players on their shortlist. James Ward-Prowse, one they could go back and revisit. They've had bids for him rejected. Youssef Fofana at Monaco, an option. They're interested in signing Denis Zakaria, who was on West Ham's list. So that could free up space for Fofana to go. It's not to say West Ham won't go back, but I think United's asking price for McTominay might be a bit of a stretch for what West Ham are wanting to pay. But West Ham wants six signings, Graham, between now and the end of August, which is quite a lot of business still to do.
Yeah, and you know, as we've highlighted on the pod, Toby, it's been a bit of... We spoke about this a few weeks ago, and a lot of people have not jumped on, but a lot of people reporting the same now, that there's been a lot of disputes in the background between Tim Steedham, the new technical director, and David Moyes, the manager. And these two sets of bids highlight it massively, don't they? Where, you know, Tim Steedham's bringing in...
Is this David Moyes winning that battle? Or,
well, I'd say it's 1-0 Tim Steedham at the minute, Scott, because it's his man coming in from Ajax.
But is it going to be 2-1 David Moyes if these two United deals come off?
It would be if they come off. I think that's a very big if. And it's just the way West Ham are going. It's a really tough situation they're working through. And we'll see with the strikers, the different one links again. We've seen Skamaka go, but there's a massive difference of opinion between which striker should come in. Eliwahi is the option for Tim Steeden from Montpellier, who most West Ham fans would love to see come in, one of the best young strikers in Europe. But our understanding it, David Moyes quite likes Divock Origi, the former Liverpool striker at AC Milan. And that just sums up the two camps perfectly. They really, we said that before, Toby, on the pod. If anything sums up these two camps, it's look at who the target for the next striker. I don't mean to laugh, but if
it's soil and water.
Exactly, Scott. And you know, for who I just can't help stopping. I like Divock Origi as a person, but who on earth is targeting him as a striker in 2023 for the Premier League? exactly. And do you know what? And I think for Tim Steeden, in terms of if he's trying to win the fans over, he just has to release who David Moyes is trying to sign, and that does his job for him.
Dominic Solanke, another name we can throw into that striker mix. West Ham interested in him. No bid made, contrary to reports elsewhere, but West Ham have looked at him. Interesting to note, Alvarez, he is a Steeden target. Steeden's pushing for this one to get done. West Ham did scout Alvarez prior to Steeden's arrival, so this is actually a Rob Newman identification, really, or the old recruitment team, but it's one that Steeden's very much taken on.
Did Rob Newman actually like? They said they did watch him, but did Rob Newman like him?
That's what we haven't fully got to the bottom of, because West Ham didn't pursue that. Obviously, now it's come to the fore. The deal is happening, barring any last minute disasters. But yeah, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it? We know Moyes wants proven Premier League experience. Tim Steeden is trying to build for the future. It's a very similar situation to Spurs, Sean. Don't really know which direction you're pulling in, and if you're putting all the eggs in the manager basket and then the manager's going to be gone within the next 12 months, what's the point? So West Ham...
How fascinating was that defeat at the West Ham for West Ham? Well, ironically, wasn't it, that they were playing Bayer Leverkusen, the team that Steeden had built, and they absolutely pummeled you, didn't they?
Played off the park, yeah, worryingly so.
4-0 in the end.
4-0 could easily have been more. Huge 3 weeks coming up for West Ham. We're all taking our bets on who the first Premier League manager is to go. A lot of us had said Julian Lopetegui if he was in charge prior to the season starting, but David Moyes will be very high on a lot
of people's... He's my pick.
Yeah.
My pick as well.
West Ham's transfer strategy surely cannot be based around just what David Moyes wants. If his position is this precarious already and we haven't even got going, it just points towards disaster, as Sean could attest to with the Conte era, if West Ham don't sign the right players.
Maguire and Origi, what's wrong with your TC? That's a fantastic...
Maguire in a back three with reduced wages, I don't hate it. Maguire in a back four, I worry about. With
West Who would Ham. This centre-back partner be? Kurt Zouma.
Well, this is the thing. Kurt Zouma perennially, I can't say that word.
Perennially. Ooh,
yes, that's injured. Nayef Aguerd would prefer to play on the left side. Yeah. He can play on the right side, but he's left-footed. So that doesn't really work.
Maguire, you got your pace there, though, next to Harry Maguire.
You do. Anyway. He's the Mickey van der Ven bailout option with pace.
I don't necessarily think it works. You don't appoint Toby D. You don't appoint one of Europe's best talent spotters to sign Harry Maguire, Scott McTominay and Divock Origi. It's just bizarre, isn't it? It really is.
If Scott McTominay joins West Ham, he scores 10 goals this season for West Ham.
Is that more than Rasmus Højlund, Scott?
It might be in Graham as well.
Wow, 10 goals. Wow. I like of all those ones we've spoke about, though. McTominay, although not a massive scene, you can see him improving and becoming a very, very good Premier League player at West Ham. The other two, not so much. But you can see the dudes. I can see why someone would want McTominay.
I think he's largely been misprofiled by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for 5+ years. I think he's an eight.
But Scott, you can see why as well that McTominay sat there thinking, wait a minute, Van de Beek's going out the door, Fred's going out the door. You can sort of see why McTominay is thinking, I'll hang around here because I'm not too far away from the first team anyway.
Well, I'd suggest if Amrabat comes in, Kobbie Mainoo would be ahead of him. Mm. I think, I, to be honest, I don't really see how he's going to get that football. But
all I would say from a West Ham point of view on that, look, Tom, there's no resale value. If a £30 million bid has been rejected, how high have you got to go to get him? And then what are you going to do with him?
10 years of solid service, Toby.
10 years of solid service.
Yeah, I'm not convinced, mate. You can try and persuade me all you want, but you just want the
money. Do you know what? I'm surprised. Scott McTominay, I think, he's like a poor man's Gareth Southgate. I think he'd make a great centre-half. I see him for Scotland. He looks really, really good. I think he'd make a tremendous centre-half.
Harry Maguire and Scott McTominay back centre-back pairing, Toby.
I'd probably rather have McTominay ahead of Maguire at centre-half. That's what I'm saying.
There you go. It's not a lot of pace there, is there? Not a lot of pace.
Just to touch on United, Amrabat is the profiled potential replacement because Fred might leave soon. Fred, Van der Beek, those kinds of players on the way out. McTominay possibly. United doing a bit of a clear out. And there's another signing that United could make that Graham doesn't like. Shock horror. Who could that be?
It's not Amrabat. I like Amrabat. But there is, understand Juventus have started conversations with Amrabat as well as Atletico. So not done and dusted that one. Who were we referring to, Scott? Sorry?
Todibo.
Oh, Jean-Claire Todibo. Yeah. The new centre-back who does have an offer from Saudi Arabia as we speak. United have touched base with his representatives. There's no bids gone in. They've just been asked to keep informed of events. A bit like Axel de Sarcy, who went to Chelsea. It's a similar situation, Scott, where if Maguire does go, they don't want to be caught in the hop. And there is others they're talking to as well, not just Todibo. But United are making sure that if Maguire does go out the door, they do have options lined up. And Todibo is one who they've considered.
Yes, indeed. Let's switch some gears. Just a few minutes left of the show because we're already 45 minutes in. We can't keep doing our 5-minute editions of this show. PSG pushing out Neymar. Will they get him out, Graham?
If they get their way. Obviously, we've spoken about Randall Colomwani coming in and Goncalo Ramos, who's coming on a very similar deal to what they did with Mbappe. He's a loan deal with a mandatory of close to £70 million. For Ramos. So they are making acquisitions. Neymar is one where he's denied. Lequipe, his father's had a right go at Lequipe this morning, talking about fake news, etc. But PSG, they're the ones pushing Neymar out. They really want him to go. There is interest from PIF, as we reported in the past. We revealed that they were very keen on taking him to Newcastle. Is this the deal that he goes to Pro League, comes on loan somewhere? Wouldn't rule it out. PIF are desperate to get him to Saudi. It's an option. And I think they will force Neymar out, I do. The fans got on his back last season. I think he's a bit like João Félix and Bernardo Silva. He's on this Barcelona taxi rank where there's people at Barcelona who would like Neymar back. Xavi isn't particularly one of them. But whilst there's this option, and like we're saying, João Félix, you're saying there's a chance, you know, it's like they're saying there's a small chance, so they're waiting. Bernardo Silva doesn't happen. Who did they go for instead? So I think they're hanging on a little bit for Barca, but yeah, I think Neymar probably will leave, and I suspect it might be to Saudi Arabia if he does go.
Let's move on to... We'll come to Romeo Lavia last.
Okay, just point out, Scott, Marco Verratti's move to Saudi is stalling. Everything was agreed, personal terms. They were going to pay €30 million, but PSG, who ironically are talking to PIF about Verratti, so obviously they're talking about Neymar as well, they want double that. They want 60 to 50 million euros. So at the moment, Verratti's saying, and that would quite suit Luis Enrique. Of all the players who were going out, he wouldn't stand in the way of Neymar or Mbappe, but he does want to keep Verratti. So he may end up staying.
I think I saw PSG have made 9 signings so far this summer, and they still might do more. That's including young players as well, but that's a hell of a revolution. Seems to be the case every summer. But let's talk Arsenal following Balogun. How much are they looking for him, Graham? And Monaco have interest, Inter have interest, is that right?
Yeah, we know Inter like him a lot, but have done. But it's just 40. I'd been looking for €40 million price tag. Monaco's a new one, you know, because Breland Bolo has suffered this ACL injury, I think it is, and suddenly Balogun, who performed so well in Ligue 1 last season with Stade Reims, he's an option for them now. But at the moment, everyone's been put off by this price tag. It does seem a little bit excessive. €40 million. I think Arsenal will come down, especially if he moves abroad. There's been a bit of interest in England, but not too much. But yeah, I think you might see Monaco make a real firm push for him now. And then it'll be between Inter. if obviously it doesn't look as if they're going to come back in for Lukaku. So Inter do need another one. It may come down to the player's preference, really. And it'd be interesting choice between Monaco and Inter. But they're the two who are pushing hardest as it stands.
And final one of the show, Romeo Lavia. Liverpool have had three bids rejected for the Southampton midfielder. Highly rated midfielder, obviously should do a good job for them if they can get him. But Southampton holding out for 50 million. Liverpool have not met that figure yet. Will they meet that figure?
I think the deal gets done. They're only 5 million apart now with add-ons. They want 50 million including add-ons, so it's a bit easier to get to, isn't it, rather than just 50 million flat, etc. So not far away. I think this one could be done by the weekend. This one could be done before Liverpool kick off their weekend. Apologies, I don't know who Liverpool
starts the season
against. So I don't think he'll feature in that game, but I think he could be a Liverpool player by that point.
Is that it then for Liverpool in terms of incomings, or because they still don't have any defensive midfielders?
Well, they would have one in Lavia, but
well, yeah, but one you can't have one.
They are looking at centre half still. This left-sided defender, obviously Van de Ven, who's just signed for Tottenham. He was one on Liverpool's list, but I think the price went a bit high. Wouldn't surprise me if they do bring a centre half in. It's not something they're absolutely desperate for. I think if one comes about, Liverpool just won't overpay. So it's one to look at. Yeah, the defensive midfield is an interesting one. You know, Curtis Jones has been filling in there as well, as you say, Scott. But they look a tad light in there. I think even with Lavia going in, I think you're right. I think they look a little bit light.
I think we did this before the show, but I was trying to work this out. And we'll do it as a sign-off. I was trying to work this out. Will Spurs or Liverpool average more goals per game scoring and conceding this season? Because for me, I'm looking at Liverpool in pre-season. There's a lot of goals going in. The way Sean's describing how Spurs are going to play, there's going to be a lot of goals. It'd be fun to watch both of them. Who are we saying? I'm going to go Spurs. Just.
Toby. I will agree. More carnage in Spurs games. Liverpool have this annoying habit of stringing together clean sheets in amongst the chaos. So I don't think Spurs are going to pull that together as much. Be fun for you though, Sean.
Yeah, I think it was Spurs.
I think Liverpool, because I think Gakpo with the pre-season dream now is going to look an absolute... I think Gakpo... We talked about Van Persie and Højlund, where I think the near better comparison, Toby, is Gakpo. Someone who started on the wing, was converted by Wenger, centre-forward. I think the same thing's happened with Gakpo. I think he will be a top-class striker in the Premier League. Always thought that. And I think Liverpool will be back up there with Arsenal and City. And I think mainly because of front three now with Darwin, Gakpo and Salah with Jota behind. I think they'll blow teams away. Not like they did last season, where it was a bit of an evolution last season, but I think they'll just have too much. Although I think Ange Ardiles at Tottenham, as John christened him to me a few weeks ago, and that's a great... I think, yeah, there's going to be a lot of 4-3s, 5-3s, 5-2s for Tottenham this season.
This is an interesting talking point. Where's Darwin actually going to play? Because don't forget Luis Diaz is fit again, and Liverpool paid £50 million for Luis Diaz. They've got all five forwards fit now for the first time. Firmino's gone. Is Gakpo going to be vying with Darwin to start centrally, in and it's Diaz versus Jota on the left?
In the 10/8.
I saw Darwin play on the left when I saw him at Newcastle. He was tremendous from that left-hand side. He was fantastic.
Do they need him to do that? Because they've got Jota and Diaz who favour that role. It's interesting. I don't know what Liverpool.
I think it gives me confidence that I put them in third. I think that front five now they know each other. Now they've had that pre-season with Klopp, could be really, really dangerous.
I'm seeing Liverpool fans saying they're going to ship a lot of goals this season as well because they're just so open. But hey, it should be fun. Premier League season starts on Friday night. Blockbuster tie of the week is Chelsea versus Liverpool at Stamford Bridge on Sunday. We'll still be doing talking transfers for the duration of the transfer window. Sorry that we missed a couple of shows, but we will be back on Friday, I believe, to pick up anything that's been happening and anything that will be happening over the coming weeks. This has been Talking Transfers from Graham, myself, Toby and Sean. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.